listening to the Drew and Jay podcast brought to you by 21 Media Productions. He is Drew Lasker and I am Jay Marriott. This is episode 27. The regular season has finished, playoff positioning is set, and it's time to preview the battles ahead with King of the Comms, Anthony Rowe. And we're going to change things up a little bit. And we got him here right now. Welcome to the pod, brother.
Thanks, fellas. This is like, you know, they say never meet your heroes, but I'm so privileged to be in the room with you boys. Been a fan for a long time.
Well, isn't that kind? But you didn't give us the dress code. You come, obviously, for those that can't see, I mean, this guy's looking slick, suited and booted. That's how much respect he gives
every,
to the pod.
Every single week, every Friday and Thursday night, I have to watch you on TV like a fashion icon now, Drew. So don't come at me with the fashion statements here, mate. All right?
Yeah, but let's just talk about that a little bit, Tone. The progression of Drew Lasker, like the start of the year to the end of the year. Just kind of describe the evolution of Drew Lasker on the TV.
Well, I think there's a level of trajectory you just can't put into words. I mean, this guy. You look at some of the earlier footage. You know, when we used to get him part time when he was still playing, he'd come in. You know, he'd always have that swag. He'd always look well. But now, I mean, God, just a full bona fide TV celebrity. I think is the status he's messing with now.
Well, I gotta give that shout out to our CEO. As you probably would have got the email as well, put on a suit, and so. You know, after that email, I started just kind of embracing it to the point where there's pressure now. They asked me at London, they were like, Ginj asked me, he was like, hey, you know what you're wearing for the finals yet? And I was like, no, actually.
That's only because one, he doesn't dress himself. He asks his wife. That's what it that's all about there, Mr. Lasker. I know you too well. And then the other rumor is that fans aren't allowed around you now because you're so sharp. You will cut fans.
You sound like Mike Tuck now with these dad jokes, man.
Well, I am a dad of three now, mate. Yeah. So I can get away with these things. But let's have a little dive in before we end up going down a rabbit hole. Drew, you know, as you look back over the season, like now it's finished. How would you best describe it? Because wow, like from a podcast, I can't believe we're here again. We say it every year, but I can't believe it's gone by that fast.
Yeah, I mean. I just literally wrapped up the player awards, and you're talking about stress. And I had tweeted this weeks ago before I even knew I was going to be involved. And I said, man, it's going to be hell picking these awards, like the team of the year. You think about how much talent, individual talent we have in this league. And you know, it's only going to get better year after year. And I just think that, you know, when we started the season, not in a million years would I ever think that, you know, you'll be seeing me across the pond and hearing Aunt Rose's voice in America, and to be able to be at that level has just been incredible. And where we're going in the next year is just, it's exciting, man.
Well, Anthony, like I heard you yesterday, mate, with listening to you on the comms, final game of the season, tasty one as well, Cheshire and London. You said you don't want it to end. So just give us a few points on the season that you've loved.
It's been, I think it's been filled with a lot of different narratives and storylines. And I think the main critique will always be that London were the by far the favourites, right? And we didn't have that late season drama in terms of the winning of the championship. But boy, did we have everything in between. You know, I would have, you know, when you say you'd put your house on someone to win a particular game, that trophy final for me was just like, whoa. It just completely flipped the switch and... I think it just showed the fearless mentality of Cheshire. And where my thing would be, and I struggled with it this year, and rightfully so, London Lions will always get the congratulations they deserve for winning the league so early. But my thing always was we didn't have a legitimate, consistent contender all year. When you look at Cheshire Phoenix, who are a great team this year, and Caledonia peaked later, but Cheshire Phoenix were always that sort of second place. They lost 11 games. You know, when you think about back in our day... teams coming second weren't losing 11 games. That's quite a lot of games to lose. Look, a great season, you know, please don't misinterpret what I'm saying, but in terms of a title contending team, 11 losses is just way too high.
Yeah. Well, just remember Rachel's listening, Anthony. I just want to let you know, and I know, you know, she will call you.
What that meant is we didn't have that sort of that chase, you know, that chase going down to April, where, you know, both teams are like, you know, deciding in the last week. So that's the only thing I would say that was taken away out of the equation. But you know, I think I would trade that, because the trophy final was something incredibly rare and very, very special.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. But listen, you know, you've cheated almost. We've let you warm up your dulcet tones. But let's not forget, you've got to get through the gauntlet that is the Marriott Minute. Nobody's been as slick all year than Vanya, I think, by the way. Last week she came in and just made it seem like it was a walk in the park. You know, so you know the drill, mate. You know, I'm going to ask you a question. You can only give me one word answer, possibly slightly jump into a two word if you're struggling. Are you ready?
Let's go.
Here we go. We're playing the Marriott Minute. Let's start with the Plymouth Raiders.
Home.
The Leicester Riders.
Home. Secondary home.
Coach Gary Stronach.
Legend.
Coach Rob Paternostro.
Hall of Famer.
Drew Lasker.
Slick.
Jay Marriott, be kind.
Loyal. Been
friends for a long time. Okay, loyal. I'll take that. Zaire Taylor.
Oh, baller.
Andrew Sullivan.
I've already used legend. Elite.
Tyler Bernardini.
Oh. Competitor.
The British Basketball League rebrand.
Fashionable.
Dan Routledge.
Oh.
The other half, legend. Right? The other
absolute
half.
Absolute legend.
One word to describe this season.
Exciting.
And one word to describe yourself.
Man. Positive.
That is this week's Marriott Minute. Just when you thought that he was strolling through the park, he tripped over a dog at the last hurdle. And that is it. Over to you, Drew.
I'm disappointed because he gave all these amazing adjectives for everything else. But then when it came to himself, he decided to eat a slice of humble pie. But let's give you
something came up first, go, mate. Man. Something came up first. He just didn't want to say it.
I get a lot more practice legend. Talking about other people. So when you put the limelight on me, I get a little uncomfortable.
Man, legend, man. Definitely. The sound of British basketball, to see where you've come from to where you are now. And it's awesome to be able to witness that. So you're the man. But let's move into this season, because Jay, before the Marriott Minute, Ann had described about not having contending chase, but the word that I thought about was there's parity. I mean, you talk about second place with 11 losses. You look at all these teams, you know, that were bunched up 4 through 7. And as we look into the playoffs, you know, there's 3 legitimate rounds where we can toss up a coin and we can argue for both sides. And so one of those matchups that I would say doesn't fit that category, and we'll start there, is London versus Surrey. And London is 4-0 in this series. But one thing that's interesting is I went and looked at the numbers in regards to Surrey. We know that Surrey loves to get up threes. They average 32 attempts a game. But against London, they seem to pull the trigger a little bit more. The first 2 games, they got up 36 attempts. But the last 2 games, including the game on Sky, they got up 40 attempts each. And the makes are trajectorying up. They go from 7, 12, 13 to making 18 in their last game. And so, let's dive into this matchup, fellas.
After you, sir.
Yeah, I think this is the one where this is the David and Goliath. I think you hit the nail on the head setting this one up, Lasker, in that I think when you take 1 and 8 away from the equation, everything else, you know, we're supposed to be experts, right, in this field and give predictions of what's going to happen. I have no clue. I think 2 to 7 is incredibly interesting. And well, specifically with 1-8, look, London have been dominant all year. And I think the congratulations to Surrey is because they haven't made the playoffs in so long. You know, Coach Lloyd Gardner has been able to do something that hasn't been done very long. And I think that's where it stops. I think the congratulations is there and the celebrations are there. And it's like the runner who's run such a hard race that the legs are starting to wobble a little bit now. We haven't seen Justin Robertson in a fair few weeks. We've seen Padiet Wang now sadly depart the team. You've got arguably the two best players that are gone out the equation there. They've been going with one natural big man the whole year. So it's, for me, it's that runner that's just got to the end of the race. They've had an amazing effort, but I don't think they've got enough to do anything to jeopardize London. And I think, to your point as well, Drew, they're going to have to shoot threes in volume. They cannot compete with the size, athleticism, meaning penetrations, attacking the rim. I don't think it works against a team like London, just because they're a lot longer in their defensive structure as well. And London are good defensively. I don't perhaps give them enough credit defensively. I think they're excellent in patches last night in Cheshire as well. So the only way that Surrey's got any chance to win that ball game is if they shoot threes in high volume, and Quinn Cooper, Andrew Lawrence, Abdul Muhammad, they're hitting. That's the only way.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, like what you say there about Surrey. Like, obviously, making the playoffs is a big deal. You know, I think from the numbers, and you know, I just want to take a quick step back just to give them their props that, you know, Plymouth and Manchester in the last weekend really gave it some fight. You know, just to show us a little bit something. But they've been poor all year. They haven't been able to figure it out all year. And you know, I think Surrey's just been the more cohesive group that gets that eighth spot. You've
been rooting for them all year, Jay, haven't you?
Absolutely, mate. Yeah, especially Jameson. I want him to have a big year, you know. But no, I mean, it's funny because everybody thinks I've got something to get about Surrey, but my challenge is, I think the problem that you've, well, it's not a problem, it's a good thing, but I think what you've seen across the league is London is pulling the levels up, and everybody has had to make changes just to keep pace. And loads of people want to talk about that as a negative. I think it's a real positive that we are seeing that kind of quality, and that's why you're seeing so many losses across the board. I'm with you, Ant. I don't see a way in which Surrey can win this playoff game. But what I will say, or the question that I will ask you, Ant, is, looking at yesterday's game, you know, the chippiness of that side of things, is that a London team that are now flexing their muscles and they feel really, really strong? Or is this a team that's still a little bit fragile and a little bit insecure as to what happened in the finals? And I can't decide which one that is. And that's the only thing that I could see going into that Surrey game, is the pressure that they're putting on themselves right now. You know, and that's what I think it is. I do think there's some cracks coming out there. You know, Cheshire are getting under their skin a little bit. They're just itching to try and get revenge. That could cause you to take your eye off the ball and get yourself in a little bit of problems. But I don't know, Toad, do you see it a different way? Are you looking at this London team and thinking they're just flexing at this point and ready for the playoffs? Or are they a little bit distracted and a little bit disjointed?
No, I think what you're saying is very valid. I think there is more pressure on them. Remember, they're eliminated from Euro Cup, so all energies must now switch to the British Basketball League. But I think pressure's good. I think we've all had it, Drew. You remember some of the best championships you've won is because you've had that amount of pressure put on you leading up to the playoff game. And I think where it was sort of exemplified yesterday with the chippiness as well and the intensity, Cheshire Phoenix, for me, they have tarnished the legacy and history of the London Lions. This London Lions team should be a clean sweep team. That would be etched into history with very few teams that have done it historically. That Cheshire Phoenix stopped that. They prevented that. So if I'm London Lions, you know, I want to inflict the most pain on Cheshire Phoenix for the next 20 years because they've just tarnished my record book. So I think, yes, I do think there's more pressure, Jay. I do, but I think that pressure is good. And the types of players that they have on their team, I think it's just bad news for the rest of the league, in all honesty.
And I think it's a perfect storm for the rest of the league to be able to reset the focus level of the London Lions, because all that's going to do is get them mad and motivated to want to face this team again at the O2. And I think that chippiness from yesterday. It's just it's the opponent and it's the player as well. I don't think Surrey has those type of personalities to where they can kind of get London off their game a little bit. We haven't seen it all year from Surrey. And so I agree with you guys' assessment that, you know, Surrey's going to have to average 40 plus threes a game because they have no interior presence outside of Jameson. And Jameson, when he's going up against the London Lions, is clearly undersized. And so
tiring, mate, that.
Yeah. So
come on, Tone. You know, if you had to go to battle with like there and you look over, you've done a great job, and then you've seen Olaseni come on, you're like, are you joking me? How do I stay out of foul trouble? How have I got enough energy? It ain't happening, is it?
And I will say this to kind of ride your gravy train with the Surrey Scorchers, Jay, is that Ant and I were responsible for giving grades to these teams heading to the playoffs, which you can find on the British Basketball website. And I had to cover
I've got them right here, Drew.
And I had to cover Surrey.
Got them right here.
There we go. And the biggest thing that stood out to me with Surrey that maybe I hadn't really noticed before is when I was going through the bench depth, I was looking at the bench and I was like, this team is really deep. And like, when you look at it from a talent perspective, there's no reason why this team should have never been fighting for six. The only reason why we're giving them that just make the playoffs tag is just because of the franchise. If you're actually looking at the roster isn't that far off from anybody else in the middle of the pack. You got Andrew Lawrence coming off the bench, you know, and so they have talent galore. You know, they have four point guards. If you think about Wang, they play Wang at the point guard this season. And so, you know, they got Cam Gooden as well. And so, you know, from that alone, from a talent perspective, they should have been fighting for six to seven. But I think it's all fair to say, I don't know if you guys agree that this would be a clean sweep in the first round with the London Lions. well, let's move things along then. Let's move to this next matchup, which is the Cheshire Phoenix, who finished second, against the Bristol Flyers, who finished seventh. Both of these teams are 2-2 against each other. They both won on each other's floor. And what's really ironic is that these are the two teams that I've been given hell by the fan bases over the last 2 years. 2 years ago, I picked the Bristol Flyers last. They surprised the league and finished runner-up. And this year I picked the Cheshire Phoenix seventh or eighth, and they finished second. And so, I think moving forward that fan bases should cheer for me to pick their teams last, because obviously they overperform. But, besides, I'll pass the baton to you, Ann, but I see this matchup from the Cheshire Phoenix perspective. This is probably the team that they would not have wanted to face out of the other teams.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think it's all about peaking at the right time as well. And Bristol are peaking at the right time. For me, I've sort of played their, I've been in their corner. I think when you look at all of the injuries and the key pieces missing from the teams, I think Bristol Flyers are arguably been the most hard done by this year with injuries and missing to key pieces. It started from the preseason for them. One of their what was projected their key import players was out from the jump, and I thought it didn't really get any easier for them, and they had to battle through that with extended fixtures for the Europe Northern League as well. So I thought that was really difficult for them. And you saw it too. And I think where I'm most impressed with Bristol was about maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. They lose at home. I think it was to Plymouth or Surrey, and then they got and then you think they're done. Like the they look dead. The body language, poor Kapulis. You know, he just looked like a broken man. And you think, all right, Bristol, onto next year. And then they go to Cheshire. I think
they lost to Plymouth, then they go to Cheshire the very next day.
Incredible, just to be able to turn it around in that short space of time. And that win, I think, renovated their whole season. Like, they were new men. You saw them walk a little bit different as well. Trajan Jacob, for me, he is a killer. He's a baller. He's a guy that will make big shots in big moments. I think he hasn't been the same this year due to injury as well. And he seems to has found his mojo back again, which makes them much more of a dangerous animal. They're always going to get high percentage shots in around the rim with Brad Green. And I think just other players have settled into it as well. They just look a little bit more comfortable with each other. And they just sort of look, you know, we've got nothing else to lose. You know, let's approach every game. So, and I think that's difficult for a team like Cheshire, because Bristol will try and make things as difficult and maybe ugly as possible. And if they're able to do that, they've given themselves a really good chance against this Cheshire team. But look, it's still Cheshire, and even when you look at the league standings, these guys 2-2. So there hasn't been much between them anyway. It's certainly not 2-7. You know, that's 2-7 is quite a big gap, but that's just to re-emphasize how tight this league is this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'll start with Cheshire, and I've said this a couple of times on the pod. Like, I think this will be a team that you look at that is transcendent and changes the way that coaches recruit for this league. You know, so like it's something very, very different than we've seen before. Big shooting threes, guards able to post up. You know, I think for me, they're the team of the year, Coach Ben Thomas, coach of the year. And I think Rideau is the best point guard in the league, in my opinion. I think he's just tough. And what I love about them is they just never know when to go away. There's so many times this year, you know, that they should have been put to bed, dead and buried. You know, a couple of weeks ago, Caledonia, I think we're up like 20, game looks over. I blinked. I think I turned away to grab my cup of tea or something like that and came back and it's tied ball game. Like they're down your throat. You know, so I think these will be one of those teams when you're looking going, you know, when did point guards start posting up? And, you know, when are these guys doing this and doing that? You know, I think we'll always point that back to Cheshire. I think you're absolutely right, Drew, that this is a little bit of a matchup from hell because, you know, I've said it all year about the Bristol Flyers, and I do not think this was by design. I don't think Andreas wanted it to be this way, but they're just thin. And they're just way too thin. Like I thought when they said they were going into Europe and everything else like that, I thought they were going to keep the majority of their group and then look to build on that. Well, what he's had to do is he's had to rebuild a squad again. He's been pretty smart. He's relied on guys from last year, guys from this year. You know, Brad Green has been a really nice addition for them. Ant's right. Injuries have robbed them. And guess what? With all of that stuff, even with a thin roster, it doesn't mean anything when you go into a three-game playoff. It doesn't. Like, you can just wipe the slate clean. You can turn around to all these guys that have had these little niggles. You know, I think Lucas is a really good player and he hasn't had an opportunity to have some consistency. Well, now it's like, okay, three games on the line. You've both been there before. You know, whether you're 50%, 60% healthy, which is the expectation going into this part of the season, you ignore it and get on with it. So, you know, I think Bristol can be dangerous from that point, tough to beat at home. You know, and I haven't really seen Cheshire falter yet. You know, so we've all said it, right? From the start of the year, Christmas, when are they going to fall away? They've never gone away. So I think they're either going to go all the way and have a massive epic fight with London, or they're going to get tripped up super early doors. And this could be, yeah, I just think this is a really tough game, an intriguing game to watch.
Yeah, and when you talk about Bristol's bench, it's the lack of scoring that comes from it because there is no scoring. It's Trajan, Jacob, and nothing else. And we know he can blow hot or cold. And so, but what gives me the confidence against Cheshire is because they're probably one of the few teams outside of London that will push you back, and they will be physical with a team that's mixed with finesse and aggressiveness, which is Cheshire. And so Bristol doesn't have a problem with winning ugly, which you need in the playoffs, playing dirty, getting on the floor, doing those little things. I think if they're able to make shots, because we know they can't shoot, their field goal percentage and their three-point percentage is subpar, but they're going to give you maximum effort, give you second chance opportunities because they attack the glass. But if they can get hot along with that effort that we know that they're going to give offensively and defensively as well, I'm with you, Jay. I could totally see them tripping Cheshire up, because look at the end of the day, the pressure is on Cheshire. You know what I mean? And so you've gotten all this way and now you have to, you got to finish the job, and finishing the job is we need a rematch in, at the O2. And so it's going
to
be, it's
I will add a caveat to that though. My caveat is got to be is like some of these coaches have got to come alive and start forcing teams to do something different. Like I want to see Cheshire having to play a different way. You know, don't let Rideau pull all the strings. Like why are we letting Aaron Rye just get comfortable and get to his spots? You know, how are we going to play? How are we going to play in these different spots to take those 3-point shooting away? Like, I want to see when we go into these playoffs overall, I just want to see some real intelligent basketball trying to take things away from these guys that have been comfortable all year.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. If I'm a coach, what I will live with Cheshire is I would live with Chargois beating you. And what I mean by that is I've noticed that, like, as of late, he's been 3-point happy. And I would just, I would on those ball screens, because he loves to pop a lot, I would live with that. And I would dare him to see if he can make 6 or 7 of those a game in a 3-game series. And I'll stay connected to everybody else.
Mate, even Aunt Rose going to be shooting threes if he has to work out with Skylar White every day. For Christ's sake, like, you got to get some threes up, you know? Otherwise, you're going to be rebounding a lot, you know?
So before we move on, Aunt, who you got in this series?
I think that Bristol are going to test them. I think that they're going to, at times, provide the pressure and an uncomfortableness. But I think in 3 games, I think Cheshire's got enough. I'd be very surprised if they don't have enough resilience within themselves to figure it out in a 3-game. I think it will go to 3. I think Bristol down in Bristol, I think they'll be able to capture that one. But I just think there's just too many guys. You know, even Cam Christen yesterday, you could just see he was on a mission, you know, and he just changed the game. Cheshire for me. Cheshire's gonna advance to the semifinals.
UJ, quick.
Yeah, a few scares, but Cheshire through.
I'm with you guys. I think that Bristol will not be able to score enough over 3 games to keep up, which moves us to round 3 in a 4-5. The Sheffield Sharks host Ants Leicester Riders, and the Sharks are 1-3 against the Riders. So the Riders are winning this series. And they have not beaten the Riders since the very beginning of the season when they had Parker Stewart and Drubel Adekoya, and Rodney Glasgow was out and Del Pesh was out. So that's how long ago it's been. The Riders are averaging against the best team in the league 98 points a game, and Teddy Allen is averaging 32 over 2 games against the Sharks.
Yeah, this is going to be complete contrast. I think you've got the discipline, defensive orientated nature of Sheffield Sharks against the free-flowing offensive production from the Leicester Riders, because offensively they've been incredibly talented this year, and even more so with Teddy Allen, who, you know, even yesterday we saw in the last game of the season, just his ability. He scored 10 points in a matter of moments. I think it was a 90-second period. It's incredible how he shoots shots in games that I wouldn't have the audacity to shoot by myself in the gym. It's just, he's that guy. It's unbelievable. But he can do it. Now, my criticism, and as a former Leicester Riders, it does pain me to see this team's identity, only because I'm old school in the sense of I know what it takes to win championships from just committing to a defensive philosophy, a selfless philosophy, by the way. That means that it's not always going to be about you every game. You'll have to sacrifice certain moments for the greater good. And this isn't a disciplined Leicester Riders team this year. I think they've had multiple breakdowns. I think they've won games purely off talent, not off team collective chemistry. And that does sit uneasy with me. I think in playoff basketball, I think you're going to get a lot more guys buy into just winning. So I think the teams that don't have that team chemistry, they're at a significant disadvantage. So I worry for Riders that, you know, you look back at all of the major games that they've lost this year, the semifinals and the trophy, the Newcastles, the big moments, the season defining games that they've had that they've lost. It's their inability to get stops down the stretch, specifically the last 6-5 minutes of a fourth quarter. It's really hard as well, but people don't understand this when you know when you're not in the bubble yourself. But you cannot just decide to be an amazingly good defensive team the last 5 minutes of a game. If you've not been doing it the first 35 minutes, it's really, really hard to just switch it on in the last 5 minutes. And that's been their biggest downfall this year. And I worry as well about I think with the Riders, they had so many changes. You look at that Riders roster at the start of the season, it's very different. Different point guard in Pinson. You had Bridges, the 6'10" guy from UGA, and Asbury. There were so many different pieces to that team, and the consistencies that they had is Kimball McKenzie, Connor Washington struggled with injury as well, but there's just been too many moving parts there. And how can a coach instill team chemistry if those parts keep moving and interchanging? And I really struggle for them here. And in complete contrast, I've talked a lot about Riders, but I have been so impressed with the Sheffield Sharks, and I have to give my utmost respect and credit to Atiba Lyons. Because yet again, he has done it again. He is, he has went above expectations. We saw the Sheffield Sharks this year as maybe being that more methodical, slow it down, make the game ugly. Let's just see if we can just draft out results. They did that at the beginning of the year. It wasn't really working. Atiba Lyons has never been afraid to make a change. I can't remember a bad change from him. Especially the second half of the season, he always makes good changes. I think Malik Green has been one of the best signings. He won't get as much credit because we've got Kwadi Green, we've got Teddy Allen. But Malik Green is unbelievably good. He is versatile. He's 6'8", he's athletic. He does the dirty work as well as you can give the ball to him at the top of the key in an isolation play. He does pretty much everything. He's that versatile, and he's made them better. You know, as soon as he was put into that team, I think he's lifted the confidence of other players offensively, because we've saw players as well that were known to in the British Basketball League. Jordan Rutinho, Kipper Nichols, Bennett Cook. Those three haven't had brilliant seasons in terms of production. You look at their numbers and moments in games where, in the corner, he's missed a three. He would have made that last year. There was a lot of those moments for me. But I think since the introduction of Malik Green, it sort of lifted the confidence in the group, and everyone's better for it. So I like the way Sheffield Sharks, you talk about trending at the right time or finding form at the right time. Sheffield Sharks have done that.
Well, you know what I'm going to say, Drew. Okay, even when the Sheffield Sharks are at their most inconsistent, they are consistently good and they find a way to finish fourth. So well done to the Sheffield Sharks. I love just being able to say that. But I think on both parts, like, I'll give plaudits to both teams, is they didn't sit on their hands and they made changes that had to happen. You know, like on paper, like Leicester Riders, you know, that the names, the CVs, et cetera, but I just think that it was a mixture between those veteran players, as Ant pointed out in Connor, but also in Mo Walker and stuff like that. They just have been too prone to injury. You know, it looks like they've really been slowed down in terms of being able to contribute, and that left Kimball really having to try and pull a group of rookies together, which was never going to work. And I think with Sheffield, you know, they've Riders just desecrated their roster and just went, we're making all these changes. And, you know, Teddy Allen himself has kind of changed the trajectory for them a little bit. But I think Sheffield Sharks have been like turning and tweaking, and it wasn't working, and Atiba just kept the faith and just said, you know, move the roster around a little bit. And as you said, Malik Green, like, it is incredible. And like you said, I do think his shine's being stolen a little bit because there's other players that have come in doing what they need to do. I'm with Ant, you know, because I'm fairly sure, unless he's so loyal to Leicester that when we get to the end of this, he's going to say he thinks Sharks come out with this one. Is, I think when it comes to playoff basketball, like, you've got to look at the team that is, consistent, especially on the defensive end. And I just think Leicester are too erratic. You know, like I said, it's great to watch sometimes. It's breathtaking to watch sometimes. It must be amazing doing the comms, and, you know, like, seeing Teddy Buckets, like you said, taking shots that we could only dream of getting away with, and making them. But you can't win a championship like that. And I would surmise, I haven't, but I would surmise that if I went back and looked at that Canadian roster where they went on to win, is that there were a lot of guys willing to sacrifice for him, both defensively and offensively, in order for that team to go and win a championship. And I just don't see that in this Leicester Riders team. The amount of times that I've perhaps seen another teammate thinking, it's my turn, you know, I've got to do this, or turning down a matchup in order to make sure that Teddy, you know, stays on fire. So, you know, I think going into this one, I think that Sheffield have started to have an identity. They're coming good at the right time, and they always do well in something. Even when they don't have a great year, Sheffield always have a run in something. So they might be dead in the league and they end up going and winning a cup. You know, they might be absolutely dead in the cup and, you know, they go and have a run in the league. So they've always been that team. And I think that, you know, they've just got a little bit more. I think they've got a much more interior presence, physicality. I know Cook hasn't necessarily had his best year, but you can go down to him and go and get a better bucket under pressure situations. You know, Kipper Nichols is capable of being that glue guy. You know, if he's popping up, and he must be a nightmare to try and box out, keep off the rim, you know, an unbelievable athlete. So, yeah, I give props to both teams. You know, I think that they've made the necessary changes to have a playoff run. I just think that one's looking more consistent than the other right now.
Yeah, the Leicester Riders, if I can describe them, because I feel like I've been up close with them a lot lately, is that they're really selfish. And it's not just Teddy Allen. Like, this team, they do not pass. And I don't know if that's a reflection of Teddy, because they know they might not get it back, but they're the most selfish Riders team I can ever remember. Because, Ant, you know, that's your, like, with the sets that Pablo and Rob, like, your sets are always been so advanced to where it was always a struggle to bring in new players, because they were so, so profound, to now, like, I don't even know if they have an offense. And then, you know, a selfish offense mixed in with a team that doesn't play any defense, it's what you guys describe, is either going to be pretty or is it going to be ugly as hell. And down the stretch, we've seen it be ugly. And for the Sheffield Sharks, which, Ant, you brought up a great point about Malik Green. What I think he's done to this team is he's put Kipper Nichols, Jordan Rutino, and even, should I say, Pipkins, into their normal spot of just being role players, high-level role players. That's no disrespect, because they've all had a chance. Think about it. Over these last 3 years, we said, after Rutino's first year, we was like, okay, in year two, and Rutino had a terrible second year. And then Kipper Nichols, our whole thing last year was saying, okay, this is his team. He's going to be the man. Couldn't fill those boots. Coming into this season, I even had Pipkins on my star watch, and I said he was going to be the most improved. And I just looked at his numbers. They're exactly the same as last year. And so Malik Green has come in and be that bona fide star in a team that's structured and have high-level role pieces. And that's why I think you see them flourishing. But I am going with the Sheffield Sharks in this round, fellas.
Me too.
You got to say it out loud, Ant. You got to say it out loud. You can't. I know this is hard. Oh. Rob might give you some stick, but you got to say it out loud with your chest. And I dare you to say the Riders, too.
That's the one thing my hesitation is that I don't ever bet against Rob Van Nistelrooy, because he figures out. All right. Okay. Let me give you my thoughts on this. I watched them. I commented on them yesterday. You've got TJ Lull on the sidelines. He's injured. I thought for me, he was the pivotal piece. I think he's a guy that perhaps has been affected most by the introduction of Teddy Allen. He was injured at the start of the season, so we didn't really start to see him in full flow. And you saw as well games where Teddy Allen wasn't there. I remember a heroic 36-point performance down in Plymouth, which, you know, very few players...
On those rims as well. Oof. Oh.
Yeah, very few players could do that. The way he did it as well in a double overtime fixture, which showed me there's a star in there, right? And he just hasn't been able to consistently produce this year, because sometimes there'll be some games you don't know he's even there. You literally have to look on the box sheet score to see he's been in the game. But so if he's out of the equation, Connor Washington looks unhealthy. Mo Walker didn't play very much. Samuel Odowu didn't play very much. So all these players, and what is Kimball McKenzie's away for family reasons at the moment. does he come back? Or if he does come back, you know, what level of shape is he going to be in? And because you saw that Riders team's very different without him. Less of a team without him. So I just think the team of moving pieces has got even more bloody pieces moving now. And you've got a stable, disciplined, structured Sheffield Sharks that have impressed me since the second part of the season. So for those reasons, I think Sheffield Sharks get that matchup.
That was a plea to the Riders fans. Yeah. That was like, these are my reasons, guys.
I'm gonna have to move house.
I mean, but the bottom line, guys, is that if Leicester can do it, they will do it by talent, and that is a possibility. So it's not off the table. They can out talent the Sheffield Sharks, but they won't beat them on structure. But which brings us to our final matchup, which is 3 versus 6. The Gladiators against my Newcastle Eagles. This matchup is even, 2-2. Both teams have won on each other home court. However, the Eagles won the first two games, but they are 0-2 against Q Money Kwadwo Green, who is averaging 33 points against this team in those two matchups. And I'll let you guys dive away. This is a team, Newcastle Eagles, that I picked second runner-up when we looked at the talent around the league. And I think I said in the last episode, this is a team that we just have to take. It is what it is. And I'm interested to get your thoughts, Ant.
Yeah, and I think I don't think you were out of your mind to pick them to come second. I think when you look at the roster that they constructed, you would think that would be. We knew from a talent perspective and British Basketball League experience, they had that on most teams this year. But did they have a group that could come together? It's very quite similar, because all the years that we battled, majority of my career, I battled against Newcastle Eagles. I see so many similarities between the Newcastle Eagles and Leicester Riders this year. And this is probably a harsh assessment, but both teams are fragile. And they're fragile mentally. They're fragile defensively. There's the talent there. There's just no question. There's the abundance of talents on both rosters. And for that reason, I do think Newcastle Eagles have underperformed this year. And it's very same symptoms as Leicester in that regard. They don't commit to themselves on the defensive end. And I think the upsetting thing as well, what you would notice, and you know this as a previous player, you just know there was a timeout and you just saw the body languages of some of the players. And when some of the players are the quote-unquote stars of the team or were brought in to be the stars, it's bad. It's bad practice, man. It's bad bad for everything. I'm a firm believer in good karma and putting in good energy. I just don't see enough of that in the Newcastle Eagles because the talent's incredible. You know, you look at Ricky McGill, who's had a stellar season. I think Jordan Johnson's been incredible. I think there was always that wrestle, who's going to be the man this year? And I think those two guys have been far and above most consistently dominant in both domestic and European competition, by the way. But there's just something missing from Newcastle Eagles. And even with Mark Stewart as well, like I'm rooting for him and I want him to do well. And I just thought at times this year, this group just didn't buy into what he was trying to sell them. And ultimately they finished sixth, and that's an underachievement, and I think they should have been better this year. Even times as well where you thought Newcastle Eagles, okay, for all of their disappointments on the defensive end, there were periods where they just couldn't score the ball, and you think, how on earth is the team constructed like this? How can they not score the ball for 5-6 minutes? That should never ever happen. A drought for them should be plenty 2-3 possessions. It's just, and they couldn't score the ball at times, and that's a problem, I think, with trust. I think when you've got guys that don't trust, meaning they won't make the extra pass or they won't trust in their teammates to be able to make the right decisions in those right moments, that's what Newcastle Eagles, I think, have struggled with all of this. And one thing I would add for Newcastle as well, and I think this is more painful for you guys up there, is that they haven't been better at home, which says to me that they haven't fully embraced the culture and the sense of responsibility of playing in front of your home fans and sometimes starting games like with no urgency and like nonchalant. Like, you can't do that on your home court. You've got a responsibility to those fans who have paid to watch you play. I always felt a little bit more pressure playing at home. I always did. I just felt that it was my obligation to perform. Now, while I've listed all of those deficiencies for Newcastle years and what's wrong with them, they're a very good team. You know, they've had some big performances this year and made us all proud in European competition as well, boasting the MVP and Ricky McGill. I just think the Caledonia Gladiators, they've went in the right direction, where perhaps the Eagles have not. I think Caledonia have had to do a lot of reconstructing. The team was made this year to compete in the FIBA Europe Cup. They thought they had to go pound for pound with the other European-style teams in doing that. And I think that was a mistake. And I think Coach Murray would admit that in hindsight, because the team that he has now is incredible. You know, the introduction of some of the players that they've got. I thought Bothwell started off very slow, and I questioned, you know, whether he could play at this level. But I think he just gives them a different dynamic, and he's always aggressive in attacking the rim. But Kwade Green has been the difference maker. He's the type of player that you'll get once in a blue moon in the British Basketball League, just because there'll be teams that willing to offer higher remunerations for his services. But Kwade Green is a very special player, and he's made them a lot better. And I think where they've struggled, and you know, sometimes when you lose a key player like Farrell Hodges, the team captain, the leader, and he's the starting five man, you look at what happens to other players. Clifton Moore Jr., wow, has that been such a positive, you know, impact on him. He's shouldered that responsibility. He's took the opportunity with two hands, and he's balling like a bona fide all-star. So I think they've had players that have stepped up. I really, really like how Malcolm has just developed into a legitimate BBL. He's like a young Gareth Murray in that sense. He's a legitimate guy where you have to guard him now. And I think the secret to those guys too is having those innate Scottish players. Those are the guys that are going to fight and scrap and claw to get wins on their home court, because it matters to them on their home floor. So Caledonia are tough, man. They're going the right way at the right time.
Yeah, this is a really difficult one. I think this is probably the hardest one of all the playoff groups. I think if I start with Caledonia, or actually if I touch on both of them at the same time, I think what gives Caledonia the edge is that they already had the foundations in place before they added the likes of Kwade Green. You know, so my only thing was that I think you're right, Ant, you know, that like Gareth looked at this in a really really pragmatic way, and how he was going to put that roster together and how it was going to compete against Europe. You know, and it was just being honest, it was a really boring team, like really boring. Like, and they were playing quite consistently good basketball. Like, they've never really dropped off in the league. You know, they've kept it going, but we just never talked about them all year because there wasn't a lot to say. It was very bland. You know, and then all of a sudden you add Kwade Green in, and you can talk about the difference of one player, but he gets hold of that point guard, gets Bothwell off onto the combo guard action, which gives that lefty a lot more presence and a lot more ability to go and use his big body getting downhill. You know, and you look at the kid and you think he's too slight to be able to do the things that he's doing, and he just starts bullying everyone. He's got them playing faster. He's finding people in all their right spots. And then, like you said, he can be an absolute killer. And down the stretch, he can really, really break a team, because he can play you on the pick and roll. He can play it nice and slow. He can play it crafty. He can go to the dark arts and get to the line. He's just an absolute nightmare to play against. And the other thing is, he really, really seems to like the big moment. The amount of times, I mean, don't get me into the defense on these pick and rolls, you know, but people are going under the pick and rolls in the big moments, but he's hitting a, you know, 25, 30 foot three-point shot, a big shot in those dire moments, you know. So he knows how to make big shots. And I think that for that reason, I give Caledonia the edge, because they already had something. And I think they already, I think they're bought into Gareth Murray. I think they're bought into the, I think outside of Gareth, let's start top down, you know, Steve Timoney. I think they've done a great job of, we're Scottish, this is our culture, this is our heritage, this is who we represent. You know, I think there's absolutely no doubts when you go into that building what you're getting yourself into. So I think they've done a great job. I think Newcastle, in my opinion, is I think they just flattered to deceive. I think they took the easy way out at the start of the year, which was to get everybody excited about an all-star roster. You know, and how many times have we seen an all-star roster work? Because, you know, as Ant has known to win a championship, Drew, you've known to win a championship. Both of you have had to sacrifice some things that you can do really, really well in order for the team to be successful. And, you know, I think that Johnson and McGill have shone throughout. I think they found a way to get out of each other's way. But I think everybody else has just not been able to find the rhythm. You know, Defoe's been phenomenal. You know, bloody hell, I wish I could move at that age. You know, like, it was a dunk the other week as well. He had a springy little dunk as well, you know, and that's towards the end of the season. So he deserves all the credit in the world. And I think he's the only thing that does keep that group together. I think he's the last piece. I think he's the plaster over the cracks that is just about holding that team together. Because when you look about it, they've never been able to figure out how Larry Austin exists in that world. There could be lots of reasons to blame. You know, has Larry fully accepted that, you know, sadly he gets injured and as he comes back, he's the third, fourth option. And then I just don't think that they've got anything near what Taj Green is capable of. You know, the amount of games that I've watched where they're sticking him stagnant in the corner and expecting him to hit a corner ball three. You know, the way that they play fast and up tempo, is there a way that Taj Green became a five and they run people off the floor or whatever it is? I've never seen like them try and get him going. And even Whitfield, you know, like it's exactly the same thing as Ant said about Lowell. You know, like sometimes I don't even know if he played, you know, so I had to like check the box scores and things like that. And do you blame the kid or do you blame the system? You know, like you brought him in to be a shooter. You know, how many shots is he getting per game, et cetera, et cetera. You know, what does he bring to the role? So I've never really looked at Newcastle. I think Europe was a bonding thing for them. I think that was something that they were able to find a common ground on. And I think that the Ricky McGill story of, you know, being injured and out and sort of left on the street and not having a place to go. You know, Johnson wanting to prove himself, like everyone wanted to play at that level. But I just feel like since they've come back, since they've lost the euphoria of that European Cup, we've seen all those fragilities come back again, which is defensively. And as Ant said, it isn't necessary. Yes, it's defense because defense wins championships, but also offensively, they just go adrift a little bit. And I wonder if it's players coming down the floor thinking, might not touch this again. Might not have an opportunity to do something and just trying to be a little bit extra where they don't need to be. And I'm exactly the same as Ant. Like, really, I'm rooting for Stutel and even past that, you know, Coach Stronach's on the bench. You know, I'm always going to be checking in on wherever he is and whatever team he's working with. But it just hasn't worked. I think it might have done enough to review and push on another season. But if I was Paul Blake, I'd still be sitting there saying it just flattered to deceive a little bit. So I worry with them going into this that the mentality is not going to be there to take care of Caledonia. Because even when they played Bristol the other day, getting ready for the playoffs and played a heavy rotation of guys, you know, we saw Baldwin getting in and Jimenez and those kind of guys playing quite big roles in that game, they were still able to go and get it done. You know, so I think that they're showing their squad's ready to go.
Yeah, and we'll wrap this up because I know we only have an hour of Ant's time. So I'll just be real quick, brief, that what's interesting about Caledonia is that a team that played in Europe Cup, which is a huge competition, their team now is way better than that team. And the difference in this series is with all this talent that's on the floor, Caledonia has the best player and they're the most structured. And so that's why I give Caledonia the tip. And to go to Ant's point to wrap it up, the Eagles 9-9 at home, 9-9 on the road, according to Dan Routledge. And that is just, we describe that as average.
There we go.
That's it. Well, we appreciate your time, and we'll let you get back to the day job, man. This is fun, like always. You know, we got to have our yearly annual catch up, man. So we'll be listening to you on the ones and twos as we dive into the playoffs.
Yeah, I appreciate it for having me, boys. It's been great to see your own journey as well. And you've had to adapt more than the British Basketball League roster in the way that you've done things over the years, and you're still here and delivering every single week. So no, we appreciate you guys and keep doing your thing. And pleasure to be on.
Thanks, brother. Be safe, my man.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, fellas.
Well, there you go, man. That's a brief run through of all four of these matchups, and it was good to get our boy Ant Row back on here. It's always a, you know, the boys club, the Plymouth boys, and so it's a lot of camaraderie there and top assessments as well.
Yeah, lot of history with us three, and always good fun. And as I said, even if it hurt at times for Ant, we got the brutal honesty out of what's going on. And for me, what I'm excited about is, like, there's got to be an upset, right? We've got to be wrong somewhere, you know, and that's the beauty of these playoffs. And the bigger the upset, the better for me. You know, I really love it.
Well, let's do this before we get out. Let's pick which series is likely to be an upset.
Well, I think you can count out Sheffield and Leicester, because either way it goes, I don't see a 4 and a 5 as an upset. I think that's as evenly matched as it can get. I think for me, the Cheshire, Bristol, Caledonia, Newcastle are the two games I'm going to be really keenly watching and hoping for one or three game series, you know, and it for it to be an absolute thriller. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I think for me, Bristol has the best chance of upsetting, because Leicester and Newcastle aren't structured enough. Although they are talented enough, I wouldn't be surprised if either one of them won. But I think Bristol gives themselves the best opportunity because they can defend the structure. And even though they have a lack of bench, we know that those rotations, they should be tightening up as we get to the playoffs, and teams will be 7 deep. And let's roll on. And as, like I said, as long as they can get hot and they can keep scoring, I think they got a good chance.
Yeah, and one thing I will say is, you know, as we've seen happen over the last couple of weeks, everybody chime in. Like, we wanna hear your comments, your thoughts, your breakdowns. We're here for you as the fans. We just provide a little bit of structure as we're going into playoff basketball. There is nothing better.
Here we go.
Can't believe it's around so fast. Nobody I'd rather break down playoff basketball with than Anthony Rowe. But that's it for us this week. Thank you, as always, for your support. If you think your brand would benefit with some love on the pod, jump in our DMs. It's playoff time, baby. We can give you some shine. Until then, Drew, lead us out.
And I think the most exciting thing about these playoffs is something that I've never been a part of, and that is a series. It's always been an aggregate or a one and done. And so to be able to, this is where we're going to be able to see the depth of basketball, a team that you got to play 3 times on the trot. And so that's what I look forward to the most, is being able to really dive deep. And so we'll be able to really separate the real from the fake. And I'm excited, man. So yeah, guys, let's hear you guys on the socials and get your thoughts. Until then, we'll see you for the playoffs.